Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to On the Ball with Rick Bucher. Here's your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
This is On the Ball on the United WeCast Network, and I am Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1, hear me on Fox Sports Radio, and you can read me by ordering the memoir of Brian Grant and his battle with young-onset Parkinson's called Rebound. His story is well worth knowing, especially if you know someone with Parkinson's. Order your copy on Amazon or visit your favorite brick-and-mortar bookstore to grab one. Are you a Kindle reader? Audiobook listener? We've got those versions as well. Support Brian's Foundation, which supports those afflicted with Parkinson's, and pick up your copy today. You can also follow me on both Twitter and Instagram, at Rick Bucher. I'm a lot of places, but there's only one place you can hear me talking about story angles and perspectives that you are not likely to find anywhere else, primarily but not exclusively involving the NBA, and that is here. All right, can I share a few grievances? Basketball grievances, NBA grievances. This is the blessing or the curse of the pandemic. Not being around players and coaches in person, which I haven't been all year, talked to a few of them, several of them by phone, some by Zoom, but nothing in person. And there's just something different about being in person. Not being in person makes it a lot easier to yell at the TV or be a harsh critic. I know of columnists and talk show hosts who purposely never enter a locker room, lest getting to know a player or coach or team prompts them to soften their ability to skewer them on TV. When newspapers ruled the land, it was considered a rule of thumb that if you wrote or said something critical about a player or team, you had to show your face the next day in the locker room or clubhouse. But that's also when local coverage ruled the land. With so much of the sports discourse now on TV, on national shows, or via national websites by voices and faces that are nowhere near the focus of their criticism, that rule is no longer a standard. Familiarity can breed contempt, as the saying goes, but when it comes to sports, I'd say seclusion does the trick, at least for me. So here is gripe number one. Whoever is working with the Milwaukee Bucks star Giannis Antetokounmpo on his free throws should be fired. Giannis has changed his form once again, and now it's worse than ever. In game two against the Nets, he dipped, then straightened out, and shot the ball leaning back, or at least with his head behind his shoulders. Rule number one on a free throw is keep your head in front of your shoulders so that your weight is forward on the balls of your feet. Not surprisingly, Giannis front rimmed the first six free throws he took, getting a lucky bounce on one and having it go in before hitting his seventh. I'm not one of those who believes free throws are easy just because an 80-year-old man in an empty gym, and you've probably seen that video, can make one after another without missing. Running up and down the floor at 100 miles an hour, deciphering the whirlwind of activity around you, and then suddenly stopping, catching your breath, with everything on pause around you as well, is a lot harder than it might seem. Never mind the crowd and the thunder sticks and the balloons and everything else that's trying to distract you. I don't believe every missed free throw is a result of choking either. Sometimes the ball just rattles out, or with muscles fatigued, the shooter misjudges how much power he or she needs to get it there. And if you're wondering why I'm not mentioning Ben Simmons, who was shooting 34% from the line in the postseason, went 0 for 2 in the Sixers win and had to be taken off the floor when Hawks coach Nate McMillan employed the hack-a-Ben strategy at the end, it's because his problem appears to be more than physical. A lack of interest? Focus? I'm not sure what it is, but he just seems to fling the ball at the hoop, hoping it goes in and is okay if it doesn't. None of this applies to Giannis, or LeBron for that matter. They're missing because their fundamentals are jacked up. And not to say that that Ben's are good by any stretch, but he doesn't seem to be looking for a solution. LeBron, for what it's worth, is a backward leaner too. Now, I hear about players spending a ton of time watching film of great players' moves and footwork so they can replicate them. Why not find one with your body type who is a great free throw shooter and adopt his positioning and motion? The ability to make free throws is invaluable for any scorer at any time, but the postseason, it's when it's huge. It's not just that you can collect a bunch of easy points while resting. It also creates space for every shot you take, every dribble you take when your team is at or near the bonus, because defenders will be more cautious about crowding you or attempting to block your shot if you know that they're essentially handing you 2 points if they do so. Gripe number two. You saw the Lou Williams experience in full effect in the Sixers' 118-102 win to tie that series at 2 games apiece. The Hawks went down early, fought their way back midway through the third quarter, and were down by 1 with under 3 minutes to play in the third when Lemon Pepper Lou came in for Bogdanovich. By the time Lou came out, with a little more than 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter, the Hawks were down by 17. The Sixers' backup point guard, Shake Milton, scored 11 of his 14 points during that stretch, largely because Lou made no effort to fight over screens or try to recover and get back to Shake, leaving poor, trundling truck Danilo Gallinari to try to run out at Milton as he buried another 3. Now, Lou really isn't a point guard, and in most instances, if he's not scoring big, he's a deficit. He did nothing to create or test the Sixers' defense during his stretch. He left the playmaking to Bogdanovich when he came back in, and Gallinari, which went about as well as you'd expect. Now, in regular season games, a team can overcome a complimentary player having a bad stretch. In playoff games, those are often the difference between winning and losing. And maybe whether it's my own personal competitive fire or it's the time I spend as a coach, watching Lou Williams just amble around, stay in no man's land defensively, not show any urgency whatsoever when it comes to, this is not regular season, I can almost understand it. It would drive me crazy then too. But in a playoff game, your team has fought all the way back. You're giving Trae Young a breather, and you're just not doing anything positive. It was painful to watch. Here's another painful view. Gripe three. It's just weird seeing Dwayne Wade cheering in street clothes on the sideline for the Utah Jazz in Salt Lake City. For those who aren't aware, he became a part owner of the Jazz earlier this season, and earlier tonight was the first time that I saw him actually at a Jazz game. I don't know if he'd been there previously, probably, but this is the first time I saw it. Now, he's not the first part owner to appear on TV as an analyst. Magic Johnson owned a piece of the Lakers when he was appearing on ESPN, but it's that kind of we don't care about conflicts of interest when it comes to who is in front of the camera that made me changed the way I look at the TV business. Now, I can live with Wade on TNT's Studio B team far more than I can seeing him in Salt Lake City backslapping Jazz players and officials. This isn't him in a Cavs uniform recruited by his buddy LeBron, or in Chicago using the excuse of the dream of playing for his hometown team to spite Pat Riley when he wasn't willing to pay him $20 million a year to stay in Miami. I get that it's a business investment, in the same way LeBron investing in the English Premier League soccer team Liverpool is. But with players buying into teams in the league and the sport that they performed in, it just hits different. Michael Jordan owning the Charlotte Hornets, being from North Carolina, makes sense, even though he's synonymous with the Chicago Bulls. When he had a piece of the Wizards, it was a little weird too, but there were extenuating circumstances. The then owner of the Wizards, Abe Pollin, sold Jordan a piece of the team in order to get him to be team president. And Jordan loved the idea of competing against Bulls GM Jerry Krause and owner Jerry Reinsdorf in the Eastern Conference, so he went with it. I would like to find out the story behind Heat owner Mickey Arison not being willing to sell Wade a piece of the Miami franchise. And maybe Wade got a deal he couldn't pass up or thought he might never get the chance to be an owner again. And that's why he went all the way to Utah. Look, when I find all that out, I'll share it here. All I know is he isn't involved in basketball operations. Wade isn't. And I can't think of two franchises more diametrically, philosophically different than the Jazz and the Heat. South Beach versus the Wasatch Mountains. Miami Vice versus Big Love. I could go on. You get the point. Miami, Salt Lake City. Two different ends of the spectrum. Dwayne Wade decided to cross the divide in order to be a part owner. Now, we've seen owners make similar jumps. Joe Lacob used to own a piece of the Boston Celtics before he bought the Golden State Warriors. Vivek Ranadive was a minority owner with the Golden State Warriors before he put together a group to buy the Sacramento Kings. But again, those instances make sense. Joe Lacob went to school at Stanford, Bay Area guy. Vivek Ranadive wanted to essentially get a team and compete with Joe Lacob, much like Michael Jordan wanting to go at Jerry Krause. Those make sense. And maybe I'm making too much of this. It just, as I said at the very top, it's just weird. It looks out of place to have Dwayne Wade part of the Utah Jazz. It would be as weird as John Stockton. John Stockton being part of the Miami Heat, living on South Beach. Mr. Spokane, Washington, pulling his yacht up in the harbor and clubbing. Yeah. Can't you just see it? Yeah, me either. All right, so here's one thing I love. TNT having the guts to air Donovan Mitchell telling his teammates at the start of the fourth quarter of game one, "It's all how we start this quarter." They played game 7 2 days ago. They'll call it quits and get ready for game 2 if we make them. Let's get ready for that. I assure you of two things. And he was referring to the Clippers. I assure you of two things. First, that the Jazz will be calling the league office and TNT complaining about the fact that they aired that comment. I guarantee you. And this is better than a Charles Barkley guarantee. In case you weren't aware, there's a league official in the TV truck who vets the content that a broadcast partner wants to use from a mic'd up player or coach. And they generally steer clear of anything that has a whiff of controversy or being contentious. It's the Saturday morning inside stuff version of NBA basketball. I also assure you that someone from the Clippers will make sure the team sees and hears that comment. Yeah, they're pros. Yeah, most are in their late 20s and 30s. But the word quit, however it's used, carries a sting and a weight that no player likes to hear applied to them. And even though it ultimately worked out for the Jazz, I don't know that the Clippers quit, and it's still going to hang in their gut that Donovan Mitchell suggested that they would. By the way, one last note. So far, three-point shooting, defending it, and shooting it is playing as big of a role as it did in the regular season. That's the question I had coming into the postseason, is would it hold? Because normally it does not. Teams don't shoot it as freely. They don't rely on it as much. The game becomes more physical, and as a result, it's a little tougher to shake free and get those shots. One reason the Brooklyn Nets look so good is that they are not only shooting the three better than anybody in the playoffs, they're the second best team defending it. Now, they have an advantage in that between the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks, they're not playing two teams that are particularly adept at shooting the three. The Phoenix Suns, by the way, have been the best in the playoffs defending it, compensating for being in the middle of the pack shooting it. The Bucks are the worst three-point shooting team still alive in the playoffs. If you look at the results in the Sixers-Hawks series and the Jazz going up on the Clippers in the first game, the winning team shot the three the best. That's what will make that Sixers-Hawks series particularly interesting. The Sixers are great at defending the three and have done what they can to add three-point shooters since last season. Can Philly attack the rim hard enough with their size to get the Hawks to suck in and leave their shooters open? Or will Atlanta's big wings, Kevin Huerter, Danilo Gallinari, and Bogdan Bogdanovich, simply rise up over Seth Curry and the Sixers' other smaller perimeter players as they did in Game 1? What I found surprising is that the Sixers shot the three slightly better than the Hawks during the regular season, and the Hawks defended it better than the Sixers in the regular season. I thought of the Sixers as the tougher defensive team because overall they are, second only to the Lakers in defensive efficiency, while Atlanta was 19th. The Hawks, meanwhile, ranked 8th in offensive efficiency, and the Sixers were 12th. If any series could reflect the influence of play at the arc and how that has changed from playoffs past, it could be this one. It bears watching. All right, that does it for this episode of On the Ball on the United WeCast Network. Please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you listen to this show on a regular basis, you know why. Helps me, helps my sponsors, helps people find the podcast. Do me a solid. Appreciate it. Only one playoff game in the next 24 hours. The Nuggets going up against the Suns. Nikola Jokic, the newly minted MVP as part of that tilt, going up against the fifth place MVP finisher, Chris Paul. This will give me an opportunity not only to take a close look at the Phoenix Suns and what they've become since knocking off the Lakers and their chances of doing any more damage in this postseason, as well as the MVP race and the decision made and how I believe or what I believe influenced that decision more than anything else. All that in the next episode, I hope. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.